Welcome back to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. My name is Sung Soo, and joining me in a moment is my co-host from across the pond and fellow member of the X-Force, Pat Dunford. Today we're going to be doing some box reviews. We have Bishop and Nightcrawler to go over, but first, Pat, how you doing?
Doing great as always, TT. Thanks for asking. Just come back from another fantastic two-day MCP event in London. We did a five-person team event with seven different teams battling out over seven rounds. It was a blast.
Couldn't get another team? You had to have the bye?
Well, that is a shame. So the event, I should credit the event, right? The event was Mutant Weekend of Secret Wars here in London, run by Curtis and Jamie. Thanks, guys, for putting that on. And you know what? Having an odd number of teams was a shame, but it kind of worked out perfectly because with seven rounds, what it meant is we could play a full round robin. And we could play, every team could play every other team at the event. And then every team had a bye round. But actually, when you're a team, having a bye is not that big a deal because you can play against each other. You can go and get like a team lunch or whatever, have a lie-in if you're the bye in the morning. So it worked out great.
All right. Well, fair enough. Sounds like a good event.
Yeah, it was good fun.
Highlander rules, or what did you guys end up doing?
Yeah, we did Highlander for characters only.
Okay.
And I joined the prestigious London B team. Battled hard and managed to narrowly win the event on tiebreakers. So that was good. We went 6-1.
Congratulations. Did you have anyone playing X-Force on your team?
Funnily enough, we didn't. But X-Force was well represented in the event. It's a powerful and popular affiliation. That's what I would say about it right now.
Cool. And today for Sleeper to Hear, we're going to talk about Cat and Mouse, which is an X-Force reactive card. After all characters have been deployed, an X-Force character may play this card. Place this character within two of its current position. This character cannot make more than one action during its next activation. So, Pat, what do you think about Cat and Mouse?
I think Cat and Mouse is really interesting and quite good. I don't think it's slam dunk amazing affiliation defining, but I think the board positioning that it gives you in round one and the threat that your characters can project makes it worthy of consideration.
Yeah. I mean, I think the card's good. I don't think it's an auto include. I think it's good. I would lean more towards a Pat Dunford fine. I'll give it a Pat Dunford fine. There we go. I'm there.
Yeah. I mean, it lets you use your characters to start aggressively attacking in round one, right? It's not... You can't use it very much to steal things and escape because you're limited to a single move action, right? So it's not so much a card you play in round one for a VP lead, but rather you play it on a model like Cable or Psylocke who have ways to move themselves and have long range attacks, and you position them in such a way that they can combine all these things with Cat and Mouse to be hitting people in round one, right? And you just use it to start the attrition train rolling early.
Yeah, I think it's a good card. I mean, the reposition's powerful. The reposition, the place effect. Mm-hmm. I do have a question, Pat. Can I use this in round three?
Am I going to need to read the card again?
I'm just asking just like an innocent question here.
Okay, I'm pulling up the card. I hope you're happy with yourself.
All right, thank you. I am. I'm smirking right now.
All right, okay. After all characters have been deployed. I see what you're saying here. Like, technically, every part of the game after deployment meets that criteria, but no, it's a specific step. So you've got to do it in the deployment phase after you finish deploying all the characters.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm positive.
I don't know.
TT, don't sow this kind of disinformation amongst our listeners.
I just don't understand why it specifies that deployment step. I think I can use it whatever. What's the card that lets you hide someone in deployment?
Hide someone? The one that belongs to Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos, like Infiltration?
Yeah, there we go.
Hold on, let me look, that doesn't let you hide someone.
I don't remember.
That lets them come in at the start of round two, right? Or at the end of round one? Yeah, at the end of the cleanup phase.
So then if they're playing Infiltration, can I not play Cat and Mouse? Because all characters have not been deployed?
No, the deployment phase is a set time in the game, so it doesn't matter.
It doesn't
matter
say anything about the deployment phase. It says after all characters have been deployed.
You're killing me here, TT, but this has been ruled on.
You picked the card. Okay. All right, buddy.
I picked this card in good faith. I was not expecting such an insidious rules question.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Go back to the card. I think it's fine. I don't know where they would put it. It's the only one move action isn't super penalizing. Just getting one of my range attackers up there, threatening more stuff, pew-pewing more people. I think it's good.
Yeah. Now, this is one of those cards that doesn't do much on a lot of characters in the game, right? But it does enough on enough different X-Force characters that it's worth playing. And in particular, it works great on Cable, and Cable's your leader, right? You're going to play him in all your X-Force games. So you always have at least one good use for this card. So for me, that makes it worth including.
I think that's fair. Yeah. But again, for me, the card's only ever been good. I mean, I think their core problem is because you only take that one move action, like you said, you pretty much have to do fair MCP things with the card, right? We're not being super exploitive during early crisis shenanigans.
Yeah, because you're doing any one move action, you're essentially meaning what at least one action needs to be an attack for this to be worth it. So you need to do an aggressive play. The closest you get to something unfair is having Cable advance towards a central line objective, then having him make an attack and then teleport away, right? To make the attack to like generate the power to pick up the objective and then teleport away. But that's not very unfair at all, right? That relies on Cable having a target and your opponent cooperating with you in that way. So yeah, it's mainly an aggressive card.
Okay. Fair enough. So we're both sleeving it though, right?
I'm sleeving it, especially because the current crop of X-Force cards, I think, are not very good, and this is the best one. But of course, that might change over the course of this box review, right?
It might, because we're going to talk about Bishop and Nightcrawler, and who do you want to talk about first, Pat?
I think we should talk about Nightcrawler. He's been previewed for a long time, right? I think he was shown in Adepticon last year?
Yeah.
I think he was, and maybe he wasn't. Maybe he was showed afterwards. I feel like this guy's card has been in the wild for like 6 months, at least. And so everyone knows about Nightcrawler. He's been a known quantity for a long, long time. There's been plenty of opportunity to test him. But he'll still be new to a lot of folks.
Okay. So Nightcrawler, Mr. Kurt Wagner, 4-3-3, 6 stamina on his healthy side, 5 on his injured side, 4 threat. That is not a lot of stamina. Size 2 medium mover. I'm just going to go over his attack suite, Pat, and then if you want to run through his superpowers, he is Teleporting Strike. Range 3-5 dice, physical builder. Power equal to the damage done. He has ha-ha. After damage is dealt, if this character is not within 2 of the target character gains the stun special condition. He also has Brimstone Blitz, which will make absolutely zero sense since Pat has not read the superpowers yet. It is a range 2 5 dice spender that costs 1. You add dice equal to the number of times this character has been placed this turn. It has a wild hit flurry of blows. After this target is resolved, this character may make an additional attack action. This attack must target the original target character. So, Pat, with zero context, what do you think of the top half of Nightcrawler's card?
I think Teleporting Strike is a very good builder. Ha-ha is an amazing trigger, right? That you can often reliably set up to apply an automatic stun, which is really, really cool. Brimstone Blitz is a fascinating spender that we can loop back in on after we've discussed his superpowers. His stat line is unremarkable, right?
Underwhelming.
Ooh, yeah, you could go that far. It's certainly on the moderate to low end of a 4 threat character.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know. I like, haha is fine. I've been spoiled. Whenever I get stunned after damage now, I'm just like, yeah. You've shown me that I can get stunned before damage. Why would I ever want it after?
TT, I gotta correct you. It's not haha. Like, the second A is capitalized. There's an exclamation mark. It's haha.
That's what I said. I said haha.
No.
I
just didn't ha-ha. Use the inflection. You've got to emphasize the second ha more. Come on, you can do it.
Haha. That's what I did. I just wasn't as loud as you.
I suppose that's good enough.
But you're just like loud on both parts. You've capitalized the first ha and the second ha. You're just really emphasizing that exclamation point, I feel.
No, I'm doing ha-ha.
Okay. Are you going to read through the cards? Are you going to cover BAMF?
Yeah, no, BAMF? Not BAMF. BAMF! Full okay, caps, exclamation mark.
There we go.
This character can spend 1 to 3 power to use the superpower. Place this character within X of itself, where X is the power spent. It can only be used once a turn. This is identical to the superpower we've seen on Magic. Then we've got Puff of Smoke, a free-to-use reactive power. When this character makes an attack, after damage is dealt, the character can use the superpower. You place the character within range 2 of the target. Then you have Unglaublich Acrobatics. When this character is targeted by a physical or energy attack, or it makes a dodge roll, it can spend 2 power reactively to add 2 dice to its defense or dodge roll. Invisible while in shadow. If Nightcrawler is within one of a terrain feature size 2 or more, he gets stealth, functionally, and Warcrawler.
That's a lot. It's a lot of text.
A lot of weird text as well. Some of it we've seen before. Some of it is unconventional. There's a few unconventional things in this guy's rules, right? The fact that his attacks care about a step that we haven't had before, which is after damage is dealt, right? This comes up in Teleporting Strike on Haha and in Puff of Smoke. And Invisible in Shadow being an interesting variation on stealth that cares about terrain is something we've not seen before either.
Yeah, I mean, whenever they can get stealth that's not negated by all the rules and banish stealth, I think that's good. This one having the caveat on it is interesting.
Yeah, I'd say on balance, there's not that much stuff that ignores stealth. The caveat is certainly more of a downside. I consider this to be worse than stealth, but whatever. Sometimes it will be useful.
Yes, I do as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so he is worse than stealth. We agree. Mm-hmm. How are you valuing BAMF?
I think BAMF is excellent.
So does BAMF mean badass motherfucker?
Maybe it does, you know. I think it's just a sound effect, but you know, read between the lines.
What is that when a word sounds like what it says? Oh, man. Failing English. Okay, you keep talking. I'll look that up.
Okay, while you're looking this up, I think it's great because, as we've seen so many other characters, being able to have a variable cost place effect gives you fantastic action efficiency, right? A free move is great, but it also gives you good power efficiency where you can save some money and move a short distance if that's all you need. You can be a big spender and place range 3, and that can be fantastic too. So it's flexible and it's powerful.
It's an onomatopoeia. I should have known that. Of course.
There we go.
Yeah, I like BAMF. It's a weird charge, right? The weirdest of charges. What size base is Nightcrawler on again? 40?
I think he's on a small base.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's one of those out of activation. It's one of those movements that's better than a charge, right? Because it's not tied to a charge. You can just use it as its own thing. It can be a charge, a hit and run, or just a third move action.
Mm-hmm. You can use it to get away or to engage.
Exactly. So it's really flexible. It's really powerful. Puff of Smoke is fun. It's another movement, and it's a free movement, right? It's a reactive power that costs 0. And it makes Nightcrawler's Teleporting Strike pretty
Brimstone
tasty.
Blitz. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Brimstone Blitz 2. But the reason I like it with Teleporting Strike, which is his builder, is Teleporting Strike is range 3. And this lets Nightcrawler then place within range 2 of his target. That's a lot of potential movement that he's getting for free, right? If you imagine I can be 3 inches or range 3 away from my target, and then I can teleport to range 2 on the opposite side of their base, and Nightcrawler is moving like 10 inches or more at that point, right? 10 to 12 inches.
Sure, and you're ordering the trigger so you could ha-ha first, right, in order to give them the stun and then end up within 2 of them.
Yeah, exactly. They both trigger at the same timing step. So you ha-ha first, apply the stun, and then move within 2 to get where you want to go. Mm-hmm. And maybe then to bring you in range of Brimstone Blitz, which is the range 2 attack. So I think all of these things work really well together. And then, of course, Brimstone Blitz has the ultimate synergy of giving you more dice the more times you've placed. Right? So Nightcrawler doesn't need that much power to have a pretty good activation of Bamfing into range to teleport strike, teleport striking, using puff of applying stun, using puff of smoke to get within range 2 of the target, and then he's gone 2 places already, and his Brimstone Blitz is going off with 7 dice. That's really good.
Yeah, and the theory is you get multiple brimstone blitzes, right?
That's the dream, right? Because
each one, so you do the line you said, you brimstone blitz, you trigger puff of smoke off of the blitz, correct?
Yeah, every time you finish a brimstone blitz,
you place
after you deal damage with it, you can puff of smoke again.
Yep.
And then the only thing that you're relying on two things to keep the chain going. You're relying on hitting the trigger for brimstone blitz, which starts out as like a, maybe a 50-50 and gets progressively better. And you need enough power because brimstone blitz is a spender, not a builder. It only costs one. But if you imagine, if Nightcrawler has four power, maybe he can bamf for one power to get in range, teleporting strike, puff of smoke. Then he's got three power left to do up to three brimstone blitzes if his triggers allow him.
Yeah, just imagine. In Cabal, as long as you keep damaging first, you could do this forever.
With Red Skull 1, you could.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. And Red Skull 1 can place Nightcrawler, though not Nightcrawler's turn.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of interesting synergy with this, right? Because this fun gimmick of Brimstone Blitz is really unique, and it immediately gets the mind racing, right? About what kind of cool things can we do to hit somebody until they die, right? Just keep bamfing off Hulk until he starts at 20 health and now he's on zero. And I think the answer is, like you said, it needs to be have good power generation slash have good ways to hit your triggers. And I don't think there's a way to fully reliably do both of those things, but you can try and set up a dream of, like you said, you could have like Red Skull in Red Skull Cabal team with Nightcrawler generating the power with a reroll from Baron Zemo and some rerolls from Arnim Zola or something. And you could try to make it happen. Do you think it's a dream that's worth trying to keep alive, though, TT? Do you think that's the best way to be using Nightcrawler?
Well, I mean, what else is Nightcrawler doing for you? Are you taking it for grab-and-go shenanigans?
Yeah, the other things that Nightcrawler is doing for you is being fast and evasive, right? Mm-hmm. Like the fact that his attack can move him a much bigger distance than his movement, right? So he has that kind of similar thing to Rhino, where if Rhino wants to get across the table, he does it by attacking people, right? And Nightcrawler can attack a string of different opponents to move himself from one end of the table to the other in a single round by using his teleporting strike with Bamf and Puff of Smoke, right? He can go a huge distance. And then, of course, when he has a huge amount of mobility, Invisible in Shadow starts to look a bit better, because he has the mobility to get near terrain and he has the speed to cover a big enough distance that the range restriction is going to matter. And then on Glaublick Acrobatics, I mean, it's just a bonus to his defenses, right? It's not especially flashy. It's not especially good, but it's a welcome way to help him stay alive a bit longer. And because aside from that, it's basically only Brimstone Blitz that's giving him a lot of power, he'll have situations where you just want to keep him alive and you just keep investing his power as he's taking damage to keep him hanging around.
So I think you kind of hit on the main issue I have is like, he's a four threat and I'm not exactly sure what I want to do with him.
Yeah. Like, I think my answer there is he's very flexible, right? And he's one of those models that you basically can capitalize on different situations. I see him as being kind of, to use an archetype name that we've been throwing around a lot recently, I think he's kind of on that assassin end of the spectrum. Think of him like
you're hoping
a four threat magic or a three threat ASM. Or sorry, a four threat Amazing Spider-Man, right? He's very fast and he can do pretty good things to a single target because he stuns them and then he tries to hit them as much as possible. How many times will he hit them? Well, who knows? Right, but that's with every time you're rolling dice to attack someone at MCP, it could be great, it could be rubbish. This Brimstone Blitz is just a variation on that, right?
Whew. Yeah. I guess I feel a little bit better with some of the classic like large dice attack pools, but I get what you're saying. Blitz can get up there. Blitz is obviously really, I mean, the entire chain shuts down if you run into a bodyguard or something else along those lines that redirects the attack.
Yeah, unless you decide to start beating them up instead.
Sure. I mean, yeah, you could run through a Koye or Cap or whoever ended up bodyguarding it. I don't know. I think I don't think I'm as high in Nightcrawler as you are. I love his movement. I am not keen on trying to blitz people down.
So I am. I love that gimmick. I mean, I once played a tournament where I took Quicksilver with Doom Prophecy and A-Force just so that I could try and have the gimmick of making infinite attacks every game. And it didn't work very well. But I think it's fun nonsense that creates for memorable games of MCP.
Sure. And if you want fun nonsense, I agree. The fun nonsense level of Nightcrawler is very high. I think I am just, I don't know. It's his stature is underwhelming for a four thread.
I think they're just about good enough, and his potential upside is really high. And I think his worst case scenario activations are not that bad, because he's still, his worst case scenario is like, I stun someone and went across the table. And his best case scenario will be like, I went across the table and killed a guy. Just kind of like Angela or Rhino do when they really go off.
I think his floor to ceiling is very far apart. I think his worst activations are pretty bad. Because if you go across the table and you stun a person, he then just explodes.
Well, you say that, but with his acrobatics, I don't think he's not the most fragile character. And I'd hope part of this, right, is he's not a character, fair enough, he's not a character that you want brawling in the middle of the table on Demons Downtown or something, right? He's one of those characters that's going to excel in spread crises where he can pick on people one-on-one, right?
Yes.
And where he has to fight one or two, like one reasonable target, a couple of weaker targets, and he can raise his defenses and he can stay alive. And he can use his speed to get those preferential matchups. Because, yeah, he's not a brawler that you want to just throw into the middle. Absolutely, you're right.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, I agree. Like, when he has his high turns, they will be extremely high. Again, for me, it's just, like, the low to average turns of him just, like...
Yeah, and I think part of what you're hitting on here, which is really reasonable, although we haven't spelled it out, is he's a four threat with no way to displace or control the opponent, right? So is that part of what you mean by his bad turns being bad, in the sense that in order to have an impact on the enemy team, his dice need to be good?
Yes, it need to be good multiple times, because I need to keep getting this trigger.
Yes. Yeah, that's totally fair. And if he just does his, like... Builder in his like Banff plus Builder into a single Brimstone Blitz. That's a 5 dice followed by a 7 dice. That's nothing to write home about.
No, and I've stuck my 4-3-3 character with 6 and 5 stamina respectively in mail in range 2 of whatever he's punching, right?
Yeah, he's certainly high variance for sure.
Right, and that's what I mean. The floor to the ceiling is way apart. And the other thing is, like, I don't understand where you get the power to go off from with the blitzes.
I think the answer is you get some good builders, because, you know, that can happen in MCP, or you have your inner team that generates power, right? So, for example, 2 of the 3 X-Men leaders have power-generating leaderships, right? There's plenty of power-generating leaderships out of there. Or you're doing it as revenge, right? Like, he has decent potential getting up from dazed and just trying to Brimstone Blitz trice. Right, like trying to just start the chain a couple of times.
Okay. I don't know. I think we're putting...
The thing is, the maths is really hard to know, right? But if you just imagine this guy has a bunch of power after he gets up from being dazed, and he spends, and he just needs to revenge on like whoever it is standing over him gloating.
I agree, in that scenario, he can do pretty well.
Yeah, I don't know what the maths is, right? But if I just imagine I spend 1 power to Banff, and then I have a 6 dice Brimstone Blitz going up progressively with dice after every trigger, and then when that one fails, I have a second one that starts on a higher number. I don't know what the odds are of being amazing there. It's a bit hard to figure out. But I feel like if I throw in a couple of rerolls from various sources, then that is a pretty scary activation that your opponent's going to be worried about.
I agree, but to be clear, this is a 4-threat character who's flipped, who is squishy on the flip side. Yeah, you'll remove 1 target.
Well, you could get lucky and remove 2, right? You could your first spender could kill 1 person, your second spender could kill another, but yeah.
Sure, if you wake up in range 2 of 2 people.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can place yourself, right? So you've got various
not in the plan options. You kill them, but yeah, your first one you'd have to place within 2, sure.
Yeah, and you've got bank, you can go quite a long way without using your attack actions, yeah.
Well, if we have to ban for the first blitz is what you do. Yeah, but yeah, I'm not
right. It all depends, of course. But I don't know. I think this guy's interesting. But you're right. How good is he will largely come down to he's probably not the best way to spend 4 threat unless at some point he does good damage with his random triggers.
Yeah, I mean, I like that this is a character that big game hunts, right? So I think, like, if in MCP, right, a lot of the meta recently has been dominated by, like, very high threat single models, right? That's an accurate assessment, whether that's Cosmic or Hulk or iHulk or Thanos or any of those. I like that we are getting cheaper characters that have this explosive potential into them, right? Where Nightcrawler, right, he threatens those characters in ways normal 4 threat characters don't. I think that's an interesting line. But in general, I don't know. It seems like a really high variance character.
Yeah, fair enough. I think he's fun. I think he's fun to use. I like models that can travel the table and try and influence things. And because he's very fast, he doesn't have to hunt big game, right? You can throw him across the table and beat up a little guy, score a VP, and he can feel fine as a very mobile assassin.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. Mm-hmm. Right. Are we ready to talk about Bishop?
Yeah, let's talk about Bishop.
I'll start us off. Lucas Bishop. Go ahead, Pat. Yeah.
Yeah. Lucas Bishop is a 3 physical, 4 energy, 3 mystic defensive stat line. 6 stamina on his front, 5 on the back. He's a 4 threat. He's size 2. He's a medium mover. Okay. His first attack is the XSE Blaster. It's a range 4, 5 dice energy builder that applies incinerate after the attack if the target's within range 3. So you get a little bit of extra spice at closer range. His second attack is Return with Interest. It's a area 2, 7 dice physical spender that costs 5 power to use. When you make the attack, you choose the attack type, so it doesn't just have to be physical, it can also be energy or mystic. And it's, I want to call out a rules point here. It says when this attack is chosen, so because it's an area attack, it's going to apply for the whole attack. You also, for the whole attack, can pay extra power up to 3 to increase the damage. So this starts off at 7 dice, 5 power, could become 10 dice for 8 power. And it has the wild trigger, extreme force. After the attack is resolved, the target is pushed away short and they become slowed. What do you think, TT?
There's a lot of words on that area attack. I think it's fine. I'm just not super sold on area attacks.
Yes, it's range 2 and it costs 5 power to start, right? That's tricky.
Yeah, and I know people always be like, yeah, but what if you catch the entire enemy team? I'm like, yeah, what if you have one model? And as we've kind of gone over this recurring theme, I'm like, I have a really high bar for 4 threats. I think 4 threats is the most competitive threat value, but and his defensive line is like, yeah, it's similar to Nightcrawler. It's just does like 3-4-3, 6-5 respectively. Like, eh.
Okay. Well then let me read you his superpowers. First, okay, we've got absorbed energy conversion. It's a 3 cost throw. It throws characters or terrain of size 4 within range 2 and throws them medium. Then we've got mutant energy absorption. This is an innate power. We've seen it before on other characters. Whenever Bishop rolls wilds on his defense dice, he can remove one of the attacker's good stuff results, and he gets a bonus power. Then we've got overload. At the start of the power phase, if he's got 8 or more power, Bishop suffers a damage. Wah, wah. And he's immune to incinerate, poison, and stun. So, TT, does this change your opinion at all?
No, not really. Did it change yours?
Well, it makes his defenses better, right? The wild good stuff defense tech is high variance, but when you roll a wild, it feels so good for that wild to functionally be 2 blocks and to give you a bonus power. And it can turn off opponents' triggers because you can remove their triggering results. So I think it's a pretty good passive. Gets better with more defense dice. He's 3-4-3. I mean, he's in X-Force. Cable can increase his defense dice. I think that superpower is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think he's fine.
His throw is great. right? It's one of the better throws. Yeah. Same throw as Beta Ray Bill, same throw as Thor, right? It's an excellent throw. I think that's one of the best things in his kit.
The builder's solid, right? Range 4 or 5 dice, sometimes it incinerates.
Yeah, it's like range 4 or 5 dice on a 4 threat, I would say, is bad. It's like the bare minimum that you expect, and it's not really good enough, but automatic incinerate is good.
Yep.
Then obviously overload is bad, right? How bad?
I think it's mostly irrelevant personally, but sure.
Well, I don't think it's irrelevant because of the fact it triggers in the power phase. So if your opponent can
KO you?
Yeah, and no, so if your opponent can leave Bishop on one hit point, then you lose a whole activation with him, which sucks, right? As he becomes dazed. So that's a big weakness, I think, that your opponent can exploit if you don't spend his power while he's on his healthy side. And it also means that when he comes back from having been dazed, he will often functionally be starting on 4 hit points. Because he's only 5 on his flap side. And if he comes back from being dazed on a model that has like energy absorption, right? So he's likely to have a lot of power, then he's just going to start with a 4 HP. So I think it's a real downside.
That's fair. That's fair. I understand what you're saying about losing the activation. I just don't see how often that'll happen, but...
Yeah, I don't think it will happen often.
But
right?
When it does, it's going to suck. That's a great
point. I think you should be managing Bishop's power so as not to let it happen. And I think the turn with interest plus his throw gives you plenty of ways to make sure that a healthy Bishop isn't losing his activation.
Okay, so then I think we need to talk about return with interest, right? So like... What are other large area attacks that we've seen, right? I mean, Strange, right? Strange has one.
I'll tell you who this reminds me of. Reminds me of Daredevil. Original Daredevil.
Oh, wow. Right? Okay, yeah.
Because Original Daredevil is a 4-threat character that does fine but unremarkable things. And then once per game, his activation is move into the middle of the enemy team and kill all of them. Right? With his area attack. And when he has those games, he feels sensational. It doesn't happen all the time. But he has the capacity to do that. And I feel like Bishop has that similar threat where if you just leave him to his own devices in a situation where you have multiple characters together, he's a huge threat. Like, if because you'd be very happy for Bishop's activation to be advance and then hit 3 people. If you could get, if you can pull that up on, you know, on like a mission like Gamma Wave or whatever, if you can pull that off, that's going to be very strong indeed.
No, I agree. Sure.
Yeah. And then, of course, the question is, well, how reliably can you do that? And it all depends, right? But it does mean, I think, that he has a unique, scary threat on any kind of crisis where people are going to be clumped up.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I understand what you're saying. The threat there is high, right?
Yeah.
He can. It's a big move attack. At the end of the day, it's a move attack, though.
Yes. And I think the other side of that coin... is this is a model that has good power generation and wants to spend his power. And this spender is after his throw. It's the only way for him to dump power. And it sucks into one target, right? So the other side of this coin is often in a 1v1 fight, his best activation is builder, throw, spender. And you're spending like 5 power to do a 7 dice attack into one target. And it's awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
You seem really down on Bishop.
Yeah, I'm just not that high on him.
Yeah, look.
Are you high on Bishop?
I think he's...
So let's be clear, we compared him to Daredevil, and I can't tell you the last time I played Daredevil.
Daredevil's good. Daredevil nearly beat the crap out of me in the TTS League last night, so I respect him. Daredevil's seeing a lot of play in Defenders right now. Anyway.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Daredevil's... 4-threat character, we talked about it so far. I mean, in affiliation, 4-threat characters, like, the bar is much lower. I guess I always compare them to, like, am I going to take this character as an out of affiliation 4? And that bar for me is really high. But
yeah, and look, I think we could compare him, just as an example, right? If we compare him to the best out of affiliation 4 that everyone plays, Beta Ray Bill, he actually has quite a lot in common, right? In that they're both medium-based medium movers. They have decent movement. They've both got the same incredible throw, right? And then Bill is tougher, right? But mutant energy absorption is very interesting. And Bishop Spender is extremely interesting in the right situation. So even though I think probably Bill is on balance a similar and better character, like there are situations where Bishop is better than Bill and other situations where he's on par. So I think he is a very playable four threat. Is he the best four threat? Not necessarily, but I would play him in affiliation for sure.
Yeah, I didn't think you say he was unplayable. I mean, to me, the best thing Bill has going for him is that base size plus the additional power generation.
Yeah, and Bishop's power generation is only through being attacked, right? And getting wild triggers his bonus power generation.
The other thing, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe X-Force already has four four-threat characters.
They do. I think, though, look, I don't know how many they've got. They've got a lot of good ones, right? They've
It's the first two Claws, Psylocke and Colossus, Wolverine and Sabretooth.
Yes. And then, obviously, he's an X-Men as well, and they've got tons of great fours as well. Including like Rogue and Logan.
And the aforementioned Nightcrawler, we assume.
Yeah. So yes, he's got a lot of competition, but he does things that those other models don't do. Like, I think he is different enough from those people that I think he's worth considering.
Okay. Yeah, I think he's fine. I just don't think he's amazing.
Yeah, he's like a... I think he's got useful tools for your toolbox, and if you want them, you'll take him in affiliation. I don't think he's an auto-include by any means.
Okay. Is there anything else we need to say about Bishop? Are we going to talk about the tactics cards?
Let's go to the tactics cards.
Since we just talked about Bishop, let's talk about Mutant Trader. Mutant Trader is an unaffiliated active action card. During Gambit's activation, he may play this card while within three of Bishop's. I automatically don't like it. The allied bishop immediately makes the attack shown. Okay, well, I like it a little bit more because it's a free action.
You'll like it less when you have to read the attack.
Yeah, that's right. But it is free at least, right? It's a bonus attack. To beam free, six dice. On wild, after each attack is resolved, the character pushes the target away short. Double wild, overcharge. This character counts all wild results in this attack roll as two successes. After the attack is resolved, this character suffers one damage. Good stuff, bad stuff. Crit skull. Gambit's Grace. During the modified dice step of each attack, this character may change all skulls to wild results. So, Pat, what do you think of Mutant Trader?
This is a weird card with a lot going on that's very hard to understand on first read, right?
Amplified ammunition.
Yeah. So, a couple of things to call out about this attack. Before we even get into the attack itself, it's doing some things that are a bit unusual that we haven't seen a lot of in MCP, right? It uses the active action.
To give someone else an action.
Yeah, it uses the active action terminology. This will come up with Nightcrawler's card as well. This is something that came out with the new core set, so it's only been in the game for a few months, and we don't have many cards with it. So what that means is Gambit is spending an action to play this card because it's during Gambit's activation. So Gambit is giving up one of his actions to make an attack, but it's actually Bishop that's making the attack, not him.
Yeah, free action.
Yeah, sort of. Worth noting that, like, in this case, obviously Bishop's positioning is really important, and it's a beam, so that can be really good or really bad, depending on what's going on. Gambit, of course, has his own way to make a beam, so it's nice that this other beam is coming from a different model. Gives you options. But worth noting, I mean, this attack has tons of wild triggers. Gambit is good at getting wild triggers, but that doesn't matter because Gambit is not the one making the attack. So Gambit can't turn these dice into wilds, right? Which would be an easy mistake to make.
Yes, you're saying that people won't realize it uses an action? What do you think?
So what I'm saying is Gambit's superpower lets him turn attack dice into wilds, right? This attack loves wilds. This is a card that Gambit is playing on Gambit's turn. He cannot use this superpower. He is not making the attack.
Correct. Bishop is making the attack.
Yeah. Now, as for the attack itself, three power? No, sorry, no power. It's free to use.
Free.
For a beam three, six dice. Like, that's okay. That's all right, right? At least that's fairly good bang for your buck. And then the triggers are incredible, but pretty difficult to hit, especially altogether, right? Very unlikely you're getting all of them.
Okay.
I mean, maybe not, right? You could argue, well, once I've got Gambit's Grace, maybe then I'm more likely, but I mean, Gambit's Grace is only... still turning your skulls, right? So you need a lot of crits, hit, crits, skulls, and wilds in some combination. Like, you're going to roll six dice, and sometimes you're just not going to trigger any of these effects, and it's going to be very unusual to trigger multiples.
Correct. I agree with that statement.
Yeah. Of course, super high variance attack, right? This is a beam that can just flatten a whole enemy team if you roll a bunch of wilds.
Yep. So, like, if you're going to play a lot of Gambit and Bishop, I think this is actually a fine card.
I agree, because...
That's a big caveat, though.
Yeah, because I think the threat of it on Bishop is quite cool, and the range from him and Gambit is not that high. I do think, though, that even if I'm playing Gambit and Bishop in all of my games, this card still might not make my 5 TT. Because although I think it's good, I think we can often do better.
So it's interesting because I think, like, we have to identify when we're playing Bishop, like you talked about before, right? If we're taking Bishop because we think we're going to be clumped up in the middle of the map, brawling it out, then I think this card might be good enough to see play.
Yes, but then do I want to take Gambit in that situation?
We're sunk cost fallacy. We are automatically assuming the only time we're using this, obviously, is when we have Gambit. So, like, we've, for whatever reason, right or wrong, we've jumped that hurdle, right?
Okay.
We're already playing Gambit. If evaluating this off Gambit, like, as down as I am on Bishop, I think Gambit's way worse. Like, I am not.
Yeah. So, I agree. I think this card is good enough to play on face value. The problem is the two characters it's attached to. This reminds me of us discussing Leapfrog last week. I think if you're a big fan for these two characters, you can play this card and it's going to be a good card. But I think the reason we won't see it played very much is you're not often going to be taking Gambit and Bishop together unless you really enjoy them.
Yep. But otherwise, I think it's a fine card.
Okay.
It's like Leapfrog. It's one of those things where, like, if you're playing the characters, this is a good two character activation card, similar to Leapfrog.
Yes.
All right. Mass Transit.
Okay. Unaffiliated. Active action. Nightcrawler spends 3 power to use it. He chooses up to 3 other allied characters within range 2, and then you place Nightcrawler within range 3 of his current position, and then each of the chosen characters is placed within range 1 of Nightcrawler. After the effect is resolved, Nightcrawler is staggered.
I like Mass Transit.
Ooh, okay. Good, I'm glad. Tell me more.
I just like any kind of super movement shenanigans. Now, obviously, there's a large negative in that this is very hard to use on turn 1. And I really want to use this card on turn 1.
Yeah? You want to just do nonsense where you move your whole team into the middle of the table on turn 1?
Yes, that is exactly what I want to do. That is my entire hopes and dreams.
Well, it can be achieved, right? There are certainly ways you can do it through a combination of, like, advanced R&D, Wong, power-generating leaderships. Like, if this is the dream you want to live, TT, you can live that dream.
Can't believe it. I feel like you go out of your way to recommend Wong to me. I don't know.
Just sliding him in there.
I don't know how I feel about this. Yeah, I don't know. I want to do it.
Would you take Wong to do this?
Go real fast. No, I would not.
But Wong can also remove the stagger from Nightcrawler. It's a double synergy.
I would rather play Hydra Strucker and give the stagger to someone else. Can't he do that?
Yeah, that's a cute thing he can do, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I want to do. I'm going to Mass Transit. I'm going to Bamf. I'm going to punch someone, give them a stagger token.
I think when Strucker came out, I don't know how long it was ago, a year or two ago, we played a little game on the pod where we tried to figure out if there was a way that we could give stagger to somebody, and we couldn't come up with one. But I think now we finally have it, TT. Stagger dream.
Okay, so I like Mass Transit. I don't know how practical it is, right? That's where I'm stuck up at. Like, I love the idea of it. Like, is it worth the character/tactics cards hoops we have to go through to get this for us on turn one? And then if we're not playing it on turn one, is this card good enough? The stagger really hurts.
Yeah, this is costing...
means I need to get more than one other person in the transit here. Go ahead, sorry.
Right, and the cost it has on Nightcrawler is huge, right? Because it's costing him 3 power and an action, and then it's also staggering him. Yeah. So it's really limiting his effectiveness for 2 rounds of the game, where he's giving up an action a round for 2 rounds and he's losing 3 power. As we discussed, one of Nightcrawler's things is with a bit of power, he has the potential to do a lot, right? If you consider that's three spenders he might be missing out on to play this card.
That's fair, sure.
Yeah. Plus the two actions to try and use them. Like, okay, this so makes him a very bad character for two rounds.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, I was going to make a joke. I was fine. So, like, we
don't
agree,
be
like,
mean. If, he's a good character otherwise.
If we're going to play mass transit, it has to be like a turn one play, right?
I don't think it has to be, but I think that's obviously... When you always have these things that have like big effects that require a lot of positioning, you can immediately imagine them being good in round one, right? We're like, cool, I can use this big effect in round one. I can do my positioning and deployment. It's going to be good. And yeah, the problem is in later rounds of the game, the positioning requirements become such that it becomes less and less feasible that Nightcrawler is going to move multiple models, and therefore more and more questionable that he wants to pay the high price of admission to use the card.
Okay, so are we willing to put three Tactus cards and in Wakanda to mass transit your Wakanda team up?
So this is what? Advanced R&D, Spirit of Wakanda, Nightcrawler goes to three power. So look, this is the problem with it in practice, right? Is there's lots of ways you can do it. You can do it with Professor X, who we'll talk about in a couple of weeks. You can do it with Wong. You can do it in Wakanda. You can do it in other ways, right? Mm-hmm. But the problem is... you're requiring some amount of support in terms of character activations and tactics cards before Nightcrawler activates to set it up. And then you're asking the question of, once you've done it, what are you actually gaining? So using the Spirit of Wakanda example, right? It can't be that Nightcrawler activates first, because he would have to play Advanced R&D, and then he won't have enough power after Spirit of Wakanda has been used. So Nightcrawler isn't going to be your first activation. Your first activation also can't be the model playing Spirit of Wakanda, because then the whole thing doesn't work. So your first activation is a model. Don't know who they are, don't know what they do. Let's just say, I don't know, Black Panther or whatever, right? Black Panther plays the car, plays Spirit and plays Advanced R&D, but sorry, whatever, you know what I mean. Black Panther plays Advanced R&D on, say, Shuri. Shuri plays Spirit. Black Panther runs off and picks up an extract and stands on the secure. Fine. Then, second activation of the round, Nightcrawler pulls everyone into the middle of the table, except he hasn't taken Black Panther with him, and one of the models he's pulled is Shuri on zero power, or Okoye on zero power. And you've got like a staggered Nightcrawler who's got nothing to do with his second activation and has no power, right? You've got a support model on no power, and then you've got maybe a couple of juiced up models, like a juiced up Wakandan and maybe a juiced up unaffiliated character. Like maybe you're pulling Beta Ray Bill and M'Baku or something. And that's it, right? You've gone through all these hoops. You've put a bunch of models in the middle of the table. And what you've got from it is you've saved those models some move actions, but now your opponent gets to activate, right? And they get to react to hypothetical M'Baku and Beta Ray Bill and be like, all right, we'll attack them, or all right, we'll walk away from them. Do you know what I mean? Like, what threat are they projecting that's so terrifying that you've contorted your whole composition to do this? Maybe if you're pulling like this reminds me, I'm sorry, I'm going on a rant here, but I'm monologuing, TT, you can't stop me. This reminds me of Defenders Portals plays before Pentagram of Farala got nerfed. Ooh. And you would put the portal in the middle of the table and you would teleport MODOK up and he would double attack. And that was great because MODOK was the best damage model in the game by a mile and was really tough. And he got to pounce on people. As in, they had no, you know, if you strayed into range of his threat, he would just attack you, right? The problem with this setup is the cost to use it is much higher because you've used like three tactics cards instead of one and multiple character activations. And therefore, it might be harder to fit in this high damage model that can attack. And your opponent has a round to react to it. So if, for example, Nightcrawler pulls the same MODOK into the middle of the table. If your opponent can do anything to interact with that MODOK, suddenly this plan doesn't look nearly as good, right? Like if the opponent is the one that gets to attack you first if you put your models in range of them, right? Mm-hmm. Or they get to maybe throw MODOK away or push MODOK away or whatever your model is, however they can counter it. Maybe they just walk away from it, right? That's the concern that I have.
You know, it's a valid concern, and that's why the question is it worth it, right? I like the card. I don't know if it's going to be worth it, but I do like the card. I like any kind of mass movement shenanigans. And then, yeah, we have to go through and evaluate whether they're worth it. And for our newer listeners, MODOK used to be the best character in the game, and sticking him in the middle table is very scary. I realize this might be confusing for anyone that didn't play 3+ years ago.
Yeah. Okay, here's an example that I think is playable and maybe passable.
Okay.
Which is, what if you have Nightcrawler with Dormammu in the Dark Dimension? That's already covered one of your power, and Dormammu is already a big guy that you can move into the middle of the table without fear of your opponent easily dealing with him, and then threaten to splat all their characters in their deployment zone, right? And then you just season to taste with other characters that you think will also do a similar job.
And we have to advance our India power over?
Or Wong.
I feel better sticking the Wakandans in the middle of the table than a Wong and a Dormammu in the middle of the table.
But I don't think you bring Wong with you. I think Wong meditates and gives Nightcrawler a power. And then Nightcrawler brings Dormammu and whatever else and you can afford.
Whatever's
you've just
left,
spent 14 threat.
Yeah.
So maybe in like a 19 threat game, you bring Dormammu and MODOK. Or Dormammu and whoever, right? Is that good?
I don't know. And then, okay, so it's move 3. Can Wong move and remove this? Can Wong activate, move up, and remove the stagger? I don't know how far Wong's moving.
Oh, I'm sure he can, yeah. He definitely can. In round 2, yeah. Absolutely, he could. Remembering how much the power costs are. I'm sure in Dark Dimension he can.
So he could advance and do it. Okay, so he can pull that off of him. And then we have Dark Dimension Nightcrawler, which is interesting, does help the power for continuously punching someone.
That's one of the things we talked about, right?
Dormammu in the middle of the table, and then we have whatever. Sure, I'll get him.
And then we have one other model of your choice from the game that's good in the middle of the table. Could be anyone,
depending
right?
Depending on threat value, or 3, 4, or 5. And
I'm sure. There's no shortage of models you can imagine you would like to have in the table.
No, we have Black Dwarf, Dormammu, and Nightcrawler in the middle of the table now. That's what I've decided.
Sure. Sure. I mean, personally, I would have gone for Crimson Dynamo, but you do you.
Yeah, well, yeah, you have a brand and I have a brand, Pat. We just got to stick with them. All right. Can we go talk about Preserve the Dream now?
Okay, but just to be clear, we think this card is really fun and it's a fun gimmick.
I think it has potential.
You think it has potential to disrupt the meta game?
Well, hold on. So all of these characters we've talked about today are potential cards, right? Yeah. Nightcrawler could kill Hulk.
Yeah.
Or he could just explode, right? Bishop could move into the middle of the table and attack 4 people, or he could KO himself on power and spend 5 dice to attack someone for 7 dice, right?
Okay.
So all I'm saying is this card could be really good.
It could. What I would counter with TT is, can you give me a situation where this card is good and Lockjaw isn't just a better, more efficient choice? Bearing in mind, Lockjaw is 3 threat, and with no extra support from tactics cards or characters, he can just place 2 models in the middle of the table in round 1.
He places 2?
Yeah, because he has 4 power and his teleport costs 2. He just sits on the deployment zone and throws 2 people into the middle of the table.
Yeah, it'd have to be right your evaluation of Nightcrawler in the mid to late game, right? After he clears a stagger.
Yes. After he's had 2 terrible activations.
Nah, his first activation is not horrible.
Really?
Yeah.
He moves him in the middle of the table and then does what? Runs away?
Yeah. He goes, stands on a point.
And then his second activation is horrible.
Exactly. Yeah. His second one is horrible. Really? Lockjaw can teleport 2 people? I haven't played Lockjaw in forever.
Yep.
I thought Lockjaw's card, I think Lockjaw's card was incredibly good before it got nerfed into the ground.
Yeah, when you could set it up. I agree. It was great. But this isn't a Lockjaw podcast. Let's talk about
It is just an action.
Talking about Preserve the Dream. X-Force reactive. When an enemy character targets an allied character with an attack, if it has a higher threat value than the allied character, any number of allied characters spend a power each to play Preserve the Dream. When they do, they immediately advance short toward the attacking character.
We have so many weird ways to reprint Avengers Assemble. I think it's fine. It's better than fine. I think it's good. I'll go as far as good.
I think it's good too. I think this is better than Cat and Mouse. And Cat and Mouse was already taken by X-Force a lot. It's a very different card. But my gut check on this is a good card that we'll see play.
Yes,
I think X-Force players are going to be excited for this one.
I think this is the best thing in the box.
I think you might be right. A couple of things worth saying about this card, right? Although, obviously, you can compare it to Avengers Assemble, as you just did. It's actually not really very similar.
No, it's closer to a variety of other weird movement shenanigans. Yeah. I was just talking about your entire team moving, but yeah.
Yeah, and bear in mind that it is very interesting because it's reactive and it's conditional on your opponent doing something. So a savvy opponent can play around this at times where it might matter the most. But of course, there's a whole conversation then to be had about, but maybe the cost of playing around it is high, you know? Maybe that means that their Logan doesn't kill your Deadpool because they don't want to trigger it, yada, yada, yada. So that's interesting. The thing that I think is most interesting about it is the fact that you can surprise your opponent by combining it with other effects, right? Because you're moving during their activation. That's already super unusual. You're repositioning your characters, which can make a huge difference in terms of things like ranges of attacks, cover, what they threaten to do in their own activation that's about to happen. And it works really interestingly with defensive abilities. Like Colossus and Honey Badger both have Too Dangerous to Ignore, right? In X-Force, they can move in to be in range of this target and this attacker. And because it happens at the target step, they can then play Too Dangerous to Ignore, right? You can also combine it similarly with things like Sacrifice, Bodyguard, Escort to Safety. There's all kinds of fascinating things this card can do potentially.
No, I agree with you. Again, I think it's a good card. Better than Cat and Mouse, like you said, I think is a fine place to put it.
Yeah. So I would happily play this card. I do think, though, that although there's lots of things that can be really interesting to happen in theory, in practice, I don't think this card is as good as a lot of the other movement type cards, like To Me, My X-Men, Avengers Assemble, because you don't have perfect control about when you use it. And you don't use it in your own activation. And generally speaking, getting bonus moves in your own activation is just much more powerful because you can combine it with your plans for that activation.
Well, I agree. But again, I think it's a good card, right?
Yeah, I think it's fun and good, and it will make your opponent... Like, you'll have games where it will feel so clever when you get to use it to have some sort of good combo effect.
And you'll have games where you use it for one character, and that often will be good enough, right? So
yeah. Yeah, worth a play. Right.
Preserve the Dream, I think we're highest on out of the tactics cards.
Yes.
I feel pretty comfortable saying Mass Transit's better than Mutant Trader.
Sure. Not really. They're not really battling for the same slot, but sure.
Yeah, they are. You only get 10 tactics slots.
Okay. If you really love Nightcrawler and Gambit and Bishop and want to play them all together, well, I suppose you're an X-Men fan at that point, aren't you? Exactly. So it's reasonable.
I'm gonna hold on to my Mass Transit stock. I think this card will be busted eventually.
I think that's
you
the
like
thing
Bishop more than me. You like both the characters more.
I like Nightcrawler more than you, but you like Mass Transit more than me, which is an interesting one.
Yeah.
Which of us will actually end up playing Nightcrawler plus Mass Transit the most remains to be seen.
Well, I think that's actually easy to answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I will.
Because you're trying to live the Mass Transit dream.
Because you're playing at a more competitive level than me. I think
Nightcrawler is competitive.
And Mass Transit?
Oh, yeah, true. The combo, yeah. Fair.
Which one of us is more likely to put Mamu plan down on the table here, Pat?
Yeah.
So again, that wasn't a knock towards Nightcrawler, but more than the Mass Transit. So we like the box. I think it's a fun box, right?
Yeah, I think it's really cool.
A long time coming.
Yeah, I think these characters are interesting. I think Nightcrawler is especially interesting. I think the cards are cool. Yeah, I give this box a thumbs up.
All right. So we do want to thank each and every one of you for listening. We especially want to thank our patrons. If you're interested in supporting us or the podcast, you can find us at patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. You can let us know on Discord everything we got wrong, why Wong is a good character, why Dormammu is the best leader. You can find that at acrossthebifrost.com/Discord. On Across the Bifrost, you can find our work and the work of so many other great content creators. We do sincerely want to thank each and every one of you for listening. And until next time, everyone, cheers and happy gaming.